Welcome to the IonaHoops.com podcast with your host, Guy Filotico.
Hey there, welcome to season 4, episode 2 of the IonaHoops.com podcast. And you can consider this the second annual on-location episode, as I'm joined by the one and only Gale Force, or Sharky, on the Iona message board. And we're coming to you from West Haven, Connecticut. Gale Force and I will run through the entire ever-changing Iona roster, up to the minute to what we know, apparently. And we'll also talk about the non-conference schedule and also share some thoughts about the MAC. I know we differ on a couple teams there, so it's gonna be really heated. Well, no, it's not. I'm kidding. Gale Force, how the hell are you? And tell us how excited you are for this upcoming season.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't believe it's been a year since we did this. I'm sure we could talk about. Not much has happened in the last year, but I guess we'll find something to talk about. But I'm thankful for the invite and looking forward to. Can't wait till November.
It's been such a wild offseason for this program. But one thing Gale Force and I totally agree on is that we are definitely Team Tobin. Gale Force and I got to spend some time with Tobin and the rest of the staff at the golf outing back in early June. I mean, I'm so impressed with the way that they're just so outgoing and with the fans and willing to talk and share their thoughts. What were your takeaways when you met the staff?
Oh, it was night and day from the last, few years, obviously. They were very engaging, friendly, would come to the table, talk to us about the team, about scheduling, they knew people. I mean, Tobin saw a guy, he knew a guy, and it's just a completely different atmosphere. And you can just tell by Twitter how the fan base is just all in. I think the activity stopped since Tobin took over, and it's just going to keep on rolling on.
Before Gale Force and I dive into all that good stuff we're going to cover, I want to give you a quick overlay of this episode on the whole, because, hey, we don't do it small here on the IonaHoops.com podcast. Gale Force and I are done. In the spirit of giving you an inside look at every new Gale, as we did all spring and summer on this podcast, we have more of those little interviews to come, magically enough, as we have more new Gales coming. And we'll start off here with Corey Schmidt. He's going to be the head coach of Southwest Mississippi Community College, which produced Isaac Bryce. So that'll be coming later on. Like I said, that interview is going to follow Gale Force and I. I told you, we're coming hard in this podcast this season. I warned you all. And I tell you now, before Gale Force and I dive into all things Iona hoops, I'm going to right now dive into a couple of Iona Iotas.
Iona Iotas.
Welcome to Iona Rodrigo Farias Ibar, 6'2 guard who is a class of 2023 member out of the Skill Factory Prep in Georgia. Just a great shooter, step back game, offers from Georgetown, South Florida, Akron, Toledo. He's been opening eyes since last summer playing for the Dominican Republic at the FIBA Under 17 tourney. He's got 3 stars on ESPN. Just again, it seems like another great backcourt ad for Tobin Anderson. Curious to see how he fits in with the others, but he's a great shooter and ball handler watching his clips. Again, welcome to Gale Nation, Rodrigo.
Iona.
Wait a minute. We added Isaac Bryce, and now we're adding Rodrigo Farias Ibar. I'm no math wizard, but isn't that 14 players? Why, yes. Yes, it is. No, we're not paying for that extra spot with NIL money a la St. John's. A rumor posted on the Iona message board, not by me and not by Gale Force, was posted suggesting that Cam Krystowiak might be leaving the program. Remember, I was at Iona practice a couple weeks back, and Cam did not participate due to injury. It's entirely possible this is one of those injuries that could linger all season, and perhaps Cam didn't want to end his playing career in that scenario, being in and out of a lineup or whatever. And again, that's just me hypothesizing. I don't know for sure. And that all said, Cam still is officially on Iona's roster if you go to the Iona Gales website. But we should also note that Isaac Bryce, who did officially sign at Iona a few days back, is not listed there yet. And of course, Rodrigo Farias Ibar is not listed yet there either. So we'll see if all these roster updates happen concurrently, which I assume they will. Maybe we're waiting on Rodrigo's actual signing letter to come through. I don't know. This is all me guessing at this point, but I wanted to share that rumor that was posted out there. Anyway, stay tuned to the message board and my Twitter feed for more information about any other roster moves that we might be making. All right, we should get back into it with Gale Force and back to our on-location recording of our conversation.
All right, we're back here. It's Gale Force and I here to talk everything Iona Hoops, Mac Hoops too, as we're going to get to that as well. So we're going to start off this little session here of on-location podcasting by going through Iona's roster. We're going to go in number order, not including the two newest Gales. And we're going to start off with number one, Liz Apanzo. I'm going to give you the mic first.
Well, Panzo to me is kind of being overlooked. As we go down the list, we'll talk about the three or four guys everybody's really high on. But when you look at Panzo's stats, he's right there. Well, and I'm not trying to start controversy, see other fans, so don't destroy me on Twitter. But when Sean Drew Gordon, was committed, he was like some hype about top transfer in the league. All-MAC talent, which I agree, he's definitely an All-MAC talent, no question. But Weza, in the same conference, same minutes, really had better stats. And I just think he's being a little bit overlooked at this point, but I'm expecting big things from him. 47% from three, 9-5-1, blocks, steals. I think he's going to surprise people with his production this year.
It was a little spoiled compared to probably most people listening to this podcast in that I actually got to see an annual practice, as I talked about in the last episode. Yeah, I wanted to see what Panzo was going to look like, too, out there. Is he just a shooter? You all knew about the 47%, but what about the rest? He definitely does some other things. He's got some active hands in passing lanes. He handles the ball really well, gets other guys involved. More complete player than I was expecting him to be. He's a 6'7" guard, don't make no mistake. You're not going to put him in a power. It's just not who he is. But I like what he brings. And, yeah, quite frankly, that 47% shooting from three was very, very legit. He probably made half his threes over the course of that day during any kind of scrimmage. So excited to see what he can bring. And, again, he's not going to be the first or second option on this offense when he's on the floor either. So he's going to get his looks, and he's going to make his three, so it's going to be fun to watch him this year. All right, let's go number two on the roster, and that is Greg Gordon, junior, 6'5". Gale Force, you're up. What do you think of this kid?
16th ranked JUCO. That's like the sweet spot. I only done well in the past with JUCOs rated that high. His highlight film, which you could take, I never seen a kid miss a shot in a highlight film, but between scouting reports, his highlights, his stats, it's right there. Is he going to average 23-11? No, but you know what? He's going to be an impact player from day one and looking for good things. I think he's on SportsCenter top 10 this year, no question about that. And he knows his game. He takes 60% from the field. 2 years in JUCO, 87 steals, 53 assists. I think he's a complete player. And I'm not going to sugarcoat the fact with the free throw shooting. It's there, but his all-around game is going to be a big part of this Iona season.
You guys are going to hear this. It's going to be a bit of a broken record. I feel like this whole roster is between 6'4 and 6'8 and versatile. So I'm going to play that tune a lot here, but Greg Gordon is an alpha. He's one of those guys that just gets it. He's already a leader on this team. That's a team with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or so grad transfer type players on this roster, and he's already one of the leaders. He's going to be one of those guys that just how is he only 6'5", 6'6", and he's scoring paint points inside like that? He's one of those types of kids. And defense, he's very active again. So I would not be shocked to see him lead the team rebounding. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him lead the team in scoring. So it'll be fun to see what he ends up doing this year. All right. Next player is number three, Jeremiah Quigley, freshman point guard, 5'11", bucking the trend of the 6'4 to 6'8 kid. Gale Force, you're up. What do you think of Quigley?
The one thing I picked up on Quigley, through my research, is he's a winner. He's won in the high school level big. if I'm not mistaken, his AAU team won Peach Jam, I believe, or the year before. He comes from winning programs. He's just a winner. You know, his playing time, who knows? I mean, the one thing he has going for him is that he's only the second true point guard on the roster. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. You know, he'll have some opportunities, I think. But, look, you can't play 13 guys. But, you know, I think he'll get some run as being the only one of two true point guards on the roster.
It's funny, again, seeing him in practice, two takeaways, one positive, one negative. Of course, you have to remember he is a freshman, so he's going to play like a freshman, but he's also going to have the opportunity to learn behind a quintessential point guard in Joel Brown. From a negative perspective, he is a little slight of build. I didn't see him look for his shot enough, and he might be the one player on the roster who I didn't see look for his shot. When he had the look, he didn't always take it. But what he does have is really, really good court vision. You can see he was, even with his height being a little smaller, he's able to spot guys that are open, and he was able to find some people. Sometimes he might force the issue. Freshmen are going to do that. But I like what he brings. I think this is a great year for him to just come off the bench behind Brown and learn and just, you know, see where he is and, you know, by next year. But I like what he can bring for the future. All right, next up, number four is Gene Aranguren, another freshman, guard, 6'3".
No guy has seen him play, and the guy has touted him in the beginning is probably the freshman, you know, most ready to play. You know, based on, like just called grunt work and just talking to a couple of writers that have seen him play, the one thing I've always heard about him was he's a dog. He's going to do anything he can to make the team win, be successful. I haven't seen him play, but I've seen that. I've been told that he does make some threes, and he's definitely got a college-ready body. So I think he has a very good chance of being part of this rotation.
Well, I absolutely love this kid before, and I love him more after seeing him part of Iona's practice with those other kids. Out of all the freshmen, I thought he was the one that actually fit in the best with all these older kids as part of the rotation, make shots. Back on defense, savvy, playing above his age for sure. I just don't see a scenario where he is not a factor this year. I was high on him before. I'm higher on him now. So I think he's going to have a great, great career at Iona. And I mentioned him before. I'm going to mention him again. I'm a big fan of Joel Brown's as well. Number five. He's the next one we're talking about. He is that quintessential point guard. And I'm looking forward to see how he does with a better team around him. Gale Force, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm high on Brown. And again, I'll bring up the one elephant in the room that everybody wants to talk about. It was the free throw shooting. Yeah, it's something that's got to be worked on. But for this first year, what he brings to the table, you couldn't ask for more. This is a kid that the 4 years starter with the Pac-12. Not many back teams are going to have a 4 year starter. You know, that at a high major level, especially a point guard, that his career assist totals are ridiculous, B42, 211. He's going to get 30 plus steals. He averaged 7-3-3 on a horrific Cal team with a horrific offense. With this Tobin system, I can see him, you know, raising the 7-3-3 line to 10-5-5. You know, I don't think that's unrealistic. He's just a tough kid. He's, you know, I think good things. I couldn't ask for more from a point guard to lead this team.
Yeah, and the one complaint I would say from watching the scrimmage is another one. I don't think he actually went to the basket enough. I think he was so focused on getting the ball to his teammates that he didn't try to get his own shot off enough. I think he is a pretty good weapon on the offensive end as himself as a scorer, and I think he could be effective. You know, it might just be something that establishes as time goes on. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in action. I think he's what this team needs, given the amount of shooters we have. All right. Uniform number seven is Idan Tritu, another grad, another kid in that 6'4 range. I'm gonna let you go first, Gale, first, because I have a lot of thoughts on
him. Idan, I remember he played against Iona a couple of years ago. Last year, he he was solid, and I guess due to injuries with Harvard, his minutes were had to be forced, you know, to increase. But what was good to see was his stats increased. He averaged last year, I believe, was like around 10 a game, but he averaged like closer to 13, 14 a game when he had, you know, his minutes picked up. He's going to be a solid role model leader on this team, teach the young guys, and wouldn't be surprised if, you know, to see him and another player we didn't get to yet as a leading scorer on the team. You know, he's here. He wants to get the NCAAs, and I think he's going to be very good and, you know, probably a starter from day one.
Yeah, so one thing I'll say about Edon is he is, like Gordon, he's an alpha. He is definitely going to be one of the leaders of this team on both ends of the floor. On the defensive end, he's got pretty quick feet. They did some drills, and I saw him going one-on-one with guys in terms of, and this is on defense I'm talking about, and he's got great footwork and is able to stay in front of his man. So I don't think he's one of those guys you're going to see getting taken off the dribble too often. Let's put it that way. On offense, he looks for a shot. My gut is he will lead the team in field goal attempts, field goals made, probably threes made. So I'm curious to see, you know, how much he shares the ball. not that he looked like a black hole in practice or anything like that, but he knows he's an alpha. And so he's going to want to put this team on his back at times. Let's see how often he actually needs to do that. But it's one of the things I was wondering about this team going into the season is you have all these guys who came from programs where they weren't the number one option. And now who wants to step up and be that guy? Who's the guy who's going to take that shot when it's a tie game with 5 seconds to go? I think it's going to be a down tree too. All right. Next up is number 10, Terrell Williams Jr., grad transfer from Southern. Again, 6'6", versatile player. Gail Force, what do you think?
I put Williams in the same, I guess, grouping as Panzo. I think he's being a little overlooked in the sense of what he's going to bring to the team. But, you know, he's 6'6". You look at his tape, and the highlight films are what they are. But what you can't tell without question is the athleticism. And it shows. There's no question that he's a very athletic player. He takes it to the rim. He shoots. He was a swag, you know, freshman of the year a couple years back, 8-4-1, you know, 48, 36, 72 shooting lines. Does he start? I don't know. I think you have 3 kids that are probably going to start that you can tell, and then you're going to have 3 or 4 guys fighting for maybe the last 2 spots. But he's definitely a rotation guy and going to do very well in the MAC.
I agree. He might be one of the most versatile guys of all the guys who are versatile on this team. He did do just about everything, a little bit of everything. He'll probably be the first one to tell you that day that I was at practice, he did not have one of his best days. But you can see that he is going to be an integral part of this team on both ends. Again, hands on defense everywhere, just active on offense, rebounding, making shots, handling the ball on the perimeter, finding guys. He's going to be pretty important. Again, just another one of those grad out there at crunch time who knows how to play in those situations. So it'll be fun to see what he does. All right, we've got 3 freshmen in a row now. Starting off at number 11, Sultan Adewale. 6'7", it's probably a fair measurement of his height. I think a lot of Iona fans feel like he is going to be that freshman that has the highest upside. Gail Force, your thoughts?
The same thoughts. I mean, you look at all the write-ups, and he's definitely out of the freshman class, without question, the most highly touted. No debating that. He's 6'7", he's athletic. I think his main role this year would be, you know, hopefully hitting the boards and rim protection. I don't expect him to be a big-time scorer, but, you know, this team doesn't need a big-time scorer. They just need guys down low to compliment, you know, Shemmer, and he can hit the boards and rim protect. I think he'll find himself a spot in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he plays like a freshman does in terms of that he's got some stuff to learn. You know, he's definitely more of a 4 than some of the other guys who where that 6'6 range that would be playing the four for us. He definitely has more of that four skill set, which is good. It's important to have somebody like that, somebody a little bit bulkier, a little bit stronger. Probably still built like a freshman, still needs to, it's going to need to, he'll look a lot different in his senior pictures than he does as a freshman. But you can also see that he's got the skill set. He showed some footwork, showed a nice touch. I saw him get a basket over Oz. So he's got some ability. And again, because of his physical makeup, he's going to have a role in this team, even though he's a freshman. All right, we get to number 13, Alex Bates, 6'5 wing. He has great potential. And I know that Yale Force is a fan.
Yep. Alex Bates, to me, from day one, has been my top pick, favorite, whatever word you want to use, as a top freshman. Loved it from day one. He's tons of offers, committed to Fordham. Once he decommitted, he was getting calls from high majors. You look at him, he's 6'5". He's very athletic, three-level scorer. And what I like about him is he plays with a little swagger. I've seen a couple clips where he'll let the opponent know, I got you. And I like that. And you need that on the team. You need guys like that on the roster. And he's my number one, my favorite freshman that put as far as a possible impact on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I'm not going to say that I was underviewing him going into this, but at the same time, I saw more than I expected to see. He has a really good versatility for a freshman. Again, you don't think freshmen are versatile. You usually think they're kind of one-dimensional and develop as they go on. He seemed to have versatility as a freshman. I mean, it's going to get better, too. And again, at that size, and again, that same kind of range of height and skill set where he's got different facets of his game, showed the ability to make three, showed the ability to go to the basket. There's a role for him without question. All right, now we go to Bates' partner in crime, number 23 on our roster, Dylan Saunders, freshman 6'8 forward. Gale Force?
Saunders, like guy said, from the same program as Alex Bates at his Virginia Premier. Very good program. He's got a lot of work to do to get into the rotation, a lot of competition, a lot of people at his spot. But he provides one thing Tobin relies on heavily, and that's three-point shooting. 6'8", has made 8-9 threes in the game multiple times. Yeah, it's lower level. The MAC is a whole different world. He's going to have to fight for PT, but I think he's going to have a pretty solid future in Iona. And he, like Bates, I guess, from the Virginia Premier program, he also plays with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, which is a good thing.
All right, we're going to go to number 24 now, Cam Krystowiak, grad 6'9". So Cam was hurt at practice, so I didn't get to see him work out. And as I noted in the Iona Iotas you heard earlier today, there is a report on the Iona message board, not from me, not posted by me, not posted by Gale Force Sharky either, that Cam is the person who is leaving the team to make room for, not to necessarily make room, he's leaving, and that's why we were able to take a couple more kids for the class of 2023. And now, if you look at Iona's website, Cam is still in the roster, so it's not official until the roster says it, but let's assume right now that he is playing. Again, at 6'9", he does bring something that we need on this team, and that's a little more height, and of course, has a great outside shot as well. Wish I got to see him in the practice that day, but we'll see. We'll see what his role is, if there is one. Gale Force, your quick thoughts on Cam, whether we have him or not.
Well, I was excited when he committed. I mean, you guys got a 6'9 grad transfer. He had 2 years, I guess, when he used a COVID year. Next year, if he's still on the roster, I thought he was a little underused in college, but even with 53-44 shooting, he didn't take many shots, but I think he would have, will be or would have been, see how that turns out, and definitely a rotation type piece.
All right, and that brings us to the next guy who's actually at the moment on our roster. Again, we have a couple new players we'll talk about. But the last man officially at this moment on our roster, number 55, King Oz Shima. Shima. Jeez, I'm either going to get it right because he's our king. We have both are going to have a lot to say here. So go for sure first.
Well, what can you say? It's King Oz. I mean, he owned him, and he didn't want to leave, and he's the one that stayed. He's the one that was loyal to the program, loved Iona State, and I think he's going to have a big time. And I'm going to say it now, he could be an all-MAC player. I think under Tobin, he's going to have a much better year. Tobin's going to handle him compared to the way he was handled the last couple of years. It's going to be very positive. I mean, his stats last year were a lot better than people talk about. And they were raised as the season went on, they were getting better. I mean, he averaged 7-5-2. His shooting lines are 52-36-68. 53 assists, only 33 turnovers. 43 blocks, 24 steals. He's athletic. He's 7 feet. What Matt talent at 7 feet puts up those kind of numbers? And I think they're definitely going to go up this year. He's in for an all-MAC type season. And he's the king. That's all I can say. I hope he gets that standing O day one when that first game people really show the, you know, the appreciation that he stuck around and lead this team.
King Oz. Yeah. I got to say, I mean, to think about what this kid decided to do in the adversity that the situation held him, watching his teammates just leave one after the other to either leave, you know, of course, graduated, they weren't coming back, but the others just to say, I'm out of here, and him just to say, really, I'm staying, is just amazing to me. I hope he gets probably the longest standing ovation any Iona player has gotten at Heinz in recent memory, event in October, then the first home game for sure. I agree that he has all MAC potential, especially in a weaker MAC that is devoid of really good bigs. You know, he's not going to have monster crazy numbers. He's not going to average 10 boards a game or anything like that, but I do. He's going to be used a little closer to the basket than we saw the coach who should not be named use him in terms of a shooter, in terms of a scorer. I think you might see him catch the ball in the box a little more because he's surrounded by shooters. You don't have to be on the perimeter if you've got four other guys who are shooting around you. So there's only so much room on the perimeter. So I do think you're going to see him go inside a little bit more, turn and get like turnaround jumpers off. Of course, he's tall enough to do that, athletic enough to do that against just about everybody in the MAC, if not everybody. So I think he's going to get his points. I think he's going to get, we'll see a bump up in rebounds. Obviously, we should have an increase in minutes. His fitness level is very good. He's King Oz. I'm so happy I'm here. I'm so happy he's here. I know there's been discussion of, hey, give him the captaincy. The pushback on that is the kid doesn't say two words. How can you make him a captain? I say, do it anyway. So that's the official roster as it appears today on his website. We do have two other guys we can talk about. So we're going to hit on them now. We're going to start off with a guy you're going to also hear a little bit more about after Gale Force and I are done here, right from his college coach, and that's Isaac Bryce, sophomore forward, 6'6", at the Southern Mississippi Community College. Gale Force, you can go first on this one.
Obviously, you know, an unknown. It was kind of a surprise to most Iona fans when we saw the commitment. I knew he had recently started playing organized ball. I didn't realize that guy mentioned earlier that it's, I think, 3 years ago he really started playing organized ball. You can see, I guess, on his video, the ultra athleticism he brings to the table. He knows how to, you know, for not playing that many years on teams, he knows how to play the game. He knows his game. I mean, the 1 year at JUCO, he was 8-6-1. Shot 53% from the floor, 75% from the line. And, you know, his JUCO year, he wasn't a three-point shooter, and he knew that. He went 0-for-1. He took one attempt. which says a lot about a kid. You know, a lot of kids are going to fire away anyway. You know, a lot of kids out there shoot 20% from three. So he knows his game. And then when you throw in the fact that he had 60 blocks at 6'6", and you know, when you watch the tape, he's just not like jumping wildly. He knows how to block shots. He knows how to use his body, use his left hand, use his right hand. I can see in the Tobin system, you know, with the pressure, carving out a definitely role, you know, on the pressure D and let the offense come along. He reminds me a bit of Corey Washington from St. Peter's, same type of size, plays inside. He was a tough matchup last year. And similar players, he's got 3 years to go, so it was a nice pickup.
Yeah, and again, when you hear that interview I did later on, you're going to hear a lot more about him, but in their comparisons on the Iona message board from Bryce, of two different people who came up. I brought up Greg Gordon. Seeing Greg Gordon in person makes it easy for me to do that after watching Bryce's highlights, but they're very similar in that they're uber athletic, 6'6"-ish kids who can score over bigger kids in the paint, have good, you know, good footwork and ball handling skills inside, and can play against bigger players. And what you're going to hear also is you're going to hear his coach talk about his development of his outside game a little bit. You know, Gelfrost was just talking about the kid didn't make a three, I think, this past season, but he's been working on that. He knows that's an element of his game that he needs to play at the Division I level. On the flip side, yeah, defense is where we're going to see him have his impact right away. I think he's going to he defends, and because we know Tobin values that defense. You know, the other comparison that was made on the message board, that similar guys, some couple guys that I think made, was Barrick. And, well, you know, that's not a bad one at all to be a model for, given what Barrick did here at Iona. So I'm curious to see what this kid does. I do think he is going to be part of the rotation because of his defensive ability right out of the gate, even though he's only a sophomore, just because you can't teach the athleticism this kid has. All right. And then we have our newest Gale, which we all probably know the least about, I guess, for more or less, but we can talk about him a little bit here. And you heard me mention him in the Iona earlier, Rodrigo Farias Abar, 6'2 guard. I'm going to let Force go first, but first thing that came to my mind is step back shooter.
Yeah, this was a complete surprise, that's for sure. And it, you know, I had to do some serious grunt work to put the pieces together. It was the class of 23, class of 24, you know, even his full name. But we all came together, and he cleared things up himself on Twitter. Obviously, a class of 23 recruit. I mean, like, you know, guy said through his tapes of different events, he's clearly a kid that can get his shot. He steps back, he knocks him down. And, you know, he was invited to that prestigious Basketball Without Borders global camp. Only 40 kids invited from 27 countries. Looking at that list, a lot of those kids are high-level recruits. I think one or two went straight to the G League, NBA G League. He averaged 17 points a game at the FIBA Under-17 World Cup, July of 22. And looking on Twitter at that Basketball Without Borders, he was picked out this day on day one, on the Friday night of the event, as a kid that stood out. A tremendous resume, you know, let's see how, you know, coming in this late, where he fits in, but to get a kid to reclass from 24 to 23 this late is a big thing. And look, we don't know what the story is with the roster yet. Right now there's 14 or 13, but the fact that, you know what, if it's a player who was leaving, which obviously there is, to go from 13 to 12, credit to the staff that they went out and they filled that scholarship up, but they just didn't. It wasn't a fly-by-night recruit. This was a legit D1 prospect. And, you know, I see a lot of MAC teams not filling their scholarships. To me, at this level, you got to fill them. Kids transfer, and, you know, if a kid leaves, you have somebody that's been in the program for the year that can hopefully, you know, fill in. And I'm not going to get into next year. We'll talk about the two recruits he already has, the 24 that are, and a couple kids coming for visits.
Yeah.
And these are the top five. I can't pronounce the kid's name. It's 6'7" kid from Florida. Top five was a bunch of other good schools. So what this staff has done is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and the thing is, again, we don't know exactly we can't confirm 100% what's happening with the roster, but the order of how we picked up these kids seems to suggest that, you know, if it is indeed Cam that's leaving, and it could be related to his injury, maybe the injury is a nagging injury that would just keep him from in and out of the lineup, and that's just not a great way to end your career as a player. So just decide to hang him up instead. I have no idea. This is all totally guesswork on my part. But I think with given the kids' injuries, that's why we went with that last scholarship for Bryce, just to get some more front court insurance, even though, again, it's different between 6'9 and 6'6. You know, kids like Bryce play bigger than their height, too. Let's not forget that. And then I think once maybe the decision afterwards was that Cam was not going to be able to stay on, they had, well, have a roster. Let's just grab this kid as another shooter. Why not? You can never have enough shooters. And again, 6'3", I don't know. I it's hard to tell for sure what he's going to do, how he's going to fit in and all that. But see that in Tobin, I trust. So I think that wraps up our roster overview, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. And we can now get into what we think about this non-conference schedule. All right, the first game of the year, you know, Tobin didn't want to play around. November 6th at Charleston. Gale Force?
Well, I just don't like the idea that, you know, Tobin started the season off of cupcakes, but... What can you say? I mean, a lot of teams, I'm going to put it out there. And I see quite a few MAC programs that their coaches, whether it's job security or they want to just build up their record somewhat, that some of the schedules are what they are. Let's leave it at that. For Tobin to start the year at Charleston, his first game ever at Iona, just tells you everything you need to know where he wants to go with this program.
All right. And then we have Tobin's first game at home. You know, people are probably thinking this is an easy game because it's a quote-unquote bye game. Sacred Heart's no joke, November 10th.
No, I think it's a window to game. I should win the home, first home game, the place will be rocking. But, you know, seeing reports from some of these Twitter accounts and guys that follow this, and Sacred Heart brings back like tons and tons of scoring. Just saw the other day that one of the accounts, one of their players is a like breakout player in the NEC. Should win the game? Yeah, probably should win the game. But that's that thing that this is going to be like a 25-point home opener win. I think this game is going to be a good game. It's going to be, you know, they're going to have to play a good game to can't just show up.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting first two games. I mean, Charleston is a game that I think is going to be telling for Iona fans in that, you know, there's a chance that we can get killed in that game. There really is, because Charleston's going to be really good. And it's going to make some fans, you know, a little worried. And then you have a game like Sacred Heart, which is deceptive and at home. You know, it's a take care of business kind of game for sure, and especially with what we have following that. It is a dangerous game. Sacred Heart's got a lot of veterans. They're going to be probably favorites in the NEC. No gimme, but it is a home game. You expect to win a home game, no matter who it is, pretty much. So, but that'll be an important one, especially coming off of what a very tough opener at Charleston. And that takes us, then we have a 10-day break, and then we play a 3-game set in the Gulf Coast Showcase. We open up against High Point. On November 20th, the second round will be against Long Beach State or Illinois State. The other side of the bracket's got some pretty solid teams, led by perhaps Hofstra. We could have our first of two meetings with Hofstra, but that's going to be a fun field. We won't break down the entire tournament right now or anything like that, but Gale Force, your thoughts about a 3-game set like that, first time traveling like that for this team?
I really don't know much or anything at all about the teams in the tournament outside of Hofstra. And if you told me now, you know, the Gales are meeting Hofstra in the finals, that's a win. You know, the game, that obviously that game will be a toss-up. I think Hofstra and Iona are pretty much, you know, even-type rosters and teams. They've had good games, you know, back and forth, each winning on their home court in the series. so far. And of course, they have Hofstra at home later on in the year. But you tell me now, 2-0 going into the finals with Hofstra, win or lose that game, I'll take that right now.
Yeah, I mean, High Point is not very strong. Neither Long Beach State nor Illinois State had great years last year as well. It is a situation where if we do look pretty good and have come together in those first two games, played pretty well at Charleston, get the win against Sacred Heart, the bracket is set up for us to get to the finals. So at the very least, I'd like to see us come up from that 2-1. Again, even if we were to lose somewhere along the way there, you want to come out of a trip like that 2-1. I think there's a good chance that that happens. All right. Then there's a game that... Well, it's the toughest one on the schedule. At Colorado, November 6th, so just 4 days after the three-game stint in Florida. Guilford, I'll let you go first.
Well, once again, you know, Tobin is testing the team. He said when he got the job, he wanted to test his team, get them ready for MAC play in the MAC tournament, and this is certainly a test. You know, I've seen reports where Colorado was like a fringe top 25 team playing them. Obviously, he's going to, you know, be a test for the Gales, and that's a win. It's a big statement and a big thing, but you know what? That's a game that you just go out there, you play your game, and you see where the chips fall.
I agree. It's a great opportunity for the kids to see the type of team you might see in the NCAA tournament if you get in. So, you know, and it's also a great measuring stick to see where this program really is. You know, certainly if this was last year's team, you'd feel like, wow, this is a game we need to win to get on our resume. It's a completely different feel going to that game this year. You want to go out there and play well and just show that you can hang with anybody. So I kind of agree. It's almost a throwaway game. Check for going. So let's just hope for the best and perform well and keep everybody healthy. Then there's a MAC weekend is going to be in there. We don't know who those games are yet. We don't have a MAC schedule out yet. But the MAC weekend will be there. And then just a couple days after that MAC weekend ends, we host for what could be meeting number two, Hofstra. Gelfors?
Well, like I stated earlier, I see these teams, you know, the equal teams. They've each, and during this series that they've had, I hope it continues. It's good for the area, good for both teams. Each team, you know, won on their home court. So they're coming back to, you know, playing at the hack. You know, hope. Eye on the win, but it's going to be a good game, just like the other, you know, games with Hofstra have been. And, you know, it's the return of Silas Sunday. So it's going to be fun watching him and, you know, get some peace. I don't know what he's starting, but just, you know, be fun seeing him, you know, banging down low with Shema. And I thought Sunday deserved more playing time than I should have owned. Every time he got in, he managed to get on the board, on the box score. And it was a couple of games where he played really well. He was a factor in a couple wins. So, great kid. I'm good to see him back. Have a nice, good game. He can have better games against other teams, but it's going to be fun having him back. And I'm sure the fans are going to show him the, you know, they appreciated him as a Gale for that 1 year.
Well, I'll say this. I have a respect for Hofstra because unlike St. John's, unlike Fordham, at least they have the onions to actually come in our gym and play. Without having to, you know, expect us to come out there for a week and, like, bow down to them because of their excellence. Hofstra fans are much better group of people in turn. You know, St. John's fans and Fordham are proving to be the dreck of the earth. I'm sure I'll have some Twitter response to that, but, you know, we don't care because they're both beneath us. Anyway, so Hofstra, anyway, has been a very solid program and quite frankly, a better league than the MAC. So it's a fun game. I love that we continue to play this series. I hope to continue to play this series. It's a game that both teams have benefited from over the years. It's an important game. It could be an important game for both teams as well. So very curious to see how that goes. 4 days after that, we have probably the closest thing we have on our schedule to a win, an automatic win. As much as Colorado might be a loss, this might be a quote-unquote automatic win. Home against St. Francis, Pennsylvania. Sadly, we don't have to say Pennsylvania anymore because St. Francis of Brooklyn is gone. But St. Francis is weak. They're expected to be weak again. Not to buy a game, but it's a game to make sure that we're right as we start to wind down toward the latter part of our non-conference schedule. Dale, for sure, thoughts on a game like that?
Oh, guys, pretty much hit it spot on. I mean, a couple early previews have, you know, shown Sacred Heart's going to probably be the favorite, and everyone I've seen, you know, pretty much St. Francis is going to, you know, the bottom, if not last. There's not much to say. It's a game that, you know, I only should win and needs to win, you know. And I just, you know, it's a game to go have fun and hopefully a nice, comfortable win and see, you know, some of the older players get some run.
All right. And then the next game then will be December 16th. It's part of the Holiday Hoop Fest in Belmont Park, New York. Part of that three-game set. The Gales will be taking on St. Joe's. Towson is playing Bryant. And then Delaware is playing, I'm drawing a blank. Delaware is playing some in the third game. I think it's URI. There it is. It took me a minute to come back. So I don't know for the first game. I don't know for the third game. It doesn't matter. It's a fun three-game set. Jared Grosso is also going to be there. Everybody come say hello. But getting to this game itself, important one. St. Joe's is projected to be upper half of Atlantic 10. Where is Iona at that time? Where are we feeling? What is our record? I have no idea. But it's a nice game to say, hey, you know, we took out an upper echelon A-10 team on a neutral floor. So it's an important game for us in that regard. But it'll be a good test. It'll be fun. You got for us?
Oh, it'll be a fun day. Like, you know, guys, you know, so I've seen Bryant and Javis back and all that stuff. As far as the St. Joe's game, like, I've seen reports where they've been picked like third or fourth in the A-10. Other people have said, that's a bit over the top. But it seems the consensus they should be 3-4. I've seen from some of the credible St. Joe's Twitter accounts that do podcasts and that guy, that they feel this is the best roster that this current, I forget the coach's name, but this is under his watch, this is the best roster they've had. But they also question his coaching ability, so we'll see. But it's definitely a very solid A-10 roster, and it will be a nice good competitive game, and a game I think the Gales could take, you know, if they play well.
Yeah, I agree. It's a game. St. Joe's has been picked in a variety of places. Hard to say where exactly they'll be as well. But again, it's one of those games as you start to wind down the non-conference schedule. You want to see rotation settled. You want to see us playing good ball going into the holidays. So important one there, I think, to go play well and represent in a neutral site setting with probably some media coverage as well. All right, then. 5 days after that is our non-conference home game finale. And again, it's one of those tough games at home, taking on Colgate, starting off for a home and home with them. Next year, we'll be up there. Class of the Patriot, probably for a few years now, I think. This is going to be a good game. It's a good game. Again, I don't know what they've got. I haven't looked into them enough to know. Do they have a lot back from last year and all that stuff? But it's a good program. It's a very good program, and I think that they are going to do well in the Patriot again. There's no reason to think they wouldn't, because they are well coached and they have run an amazing high scoring system there. So it's going to be a fun, wide open game. That I can promise. Bet the over, that and right before the holidays too. So that's one where there could be a little chaos. Gilbert, what do you think?
I agree. Colgate has been like on an Iona type run as far as, you know, dominating the Patriot with the NCAA runs. From what I have seen, they have a lot coming back and projected to be, once again, the Patriot League number one team. Great home game. I'm not sure if this is a series or just a one-off game. But again, Tobin's not backing off from year one. He's playing a bunch of solid, very good mid-major programs, and you got to give him credit. He's not shying away from anything.
All right, and that takes us to our non-conference finale, December 30th at Harvard, the Don Tritu return home story there. That's going to be a weird one for him. I'm hoping it's one of those games where he doesn't try too hard to, like, show them up or anything and doesn't play well. But it's Boston. It's the 30th. You know, let's all go. I hope I can make that trip. I feel like I can. But yeah, that should be a fun one right before New Year's. And again, just getting that last taste of non-conference play in right before we get into MAC play. So I'll use this as a springboard. I'll let Gale Force talk about this game first, and then I'll use this as a springboard to get some overall non-conference thoughts in.
Well, Harvard has been good. I think they maybe struggled a little bit the last couple of years. You know, they lost, you know, after last year's loss. I know they have a couple of nice pieces back, but they did lose 3-2. They did lose Ludlow. Should be a good game, a good test on the road at Harvard. I don't think it's ever an easy game. So, you know what? It's a good way to round out, you know, the out of conference and another solid, you know, solid game, you know, on the schedule.
So when the schedule came out, when the non-conference schedule came out, I put a post on the message board and I put a post on Twitter. You know, what do we think? There's 11 games here. What's Iona doing? 9-2, 7-4, 6-5, 3-8. Who knows? All these new guys, fairly tough schedule considering it's a new system and a bunch of new guys. Consensus is that people are kind of eyeing something like 6-5. That's probably not unfair in my mind. It's probably what I would project right now too. I think Gale Force is aligned with me on that. He's shaking his head yes as I asked that question. I mean, if you assume losses at Colorado, at Charleston, you assume wins against, say, it's dangerous, but Sacred Heart and St. Francis, that leaves a bunch of other games there that are kind of flip the coin kind of games. But how quickly can these guys come together? It's an entire new roster, learning an entire new system. There are a bunch of grad students here doing this, so you know, at least the starting five or six guys are going to be veteran players. So, you know, hope they can come together a little faster than we expect. If not, we might not see 6-5. It's a distinct possibility. But, you know, anything better than 6-5, and I think the Iona fan base is going to be just giddy going into MAC play. Gale Force, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm 5-6-5. To me, I'll sign for it right now. You know, I think the out-of-conference schedule is going to come down to the tournament. You know, you got three teams, three games, 2-1. I see 6-5 as being legitimate. I mean, I see some people who say, oh, 8-3, 9-2. That's not fair. You know, you have 13 kids that haven't even ever played together. Now you're adding two of them that haven't even gone to the summer workout. So it's work to get this world to gel and come together. So you know what? If you tell me 6-5 right now, I'll be more than happy with that.
Yeah, and anybody who's realistic will be. I think that's fair. So this will set the table, though, for the MAC, which we're going to have I think the general consensus, even among most MAC fans, is that we're probably in for a rough year. The MAC saw every All-MAC player from all three All-MAC teams, so we're talking, 16, 17 kids, either transfer out or graduate, with the exception of what's his name? I'm trying to blank on it again. Merwin James. You know, that's scary. I mean, you start talking about guys who are going to be preseason All-MAC, a couple that are going to be transfers, which is not normal in MAC circles for sure. But, you know, people like Oz are going to be first-team All-MAC, probably. And I from Siena. And, you know, I mean, so it's going to be a mix. Maybe even Stavesky from Canisius. It's going to be a mixed bag. But, you know, this is a MAC that doesn't look great on paper. The true evidence is the top of it. I mean, granted, we've had Patino and Iona, but even before that, there was always that MAC team that looked like they could float top 100, really, you know, carry the flag. I mean, it's hard to say for sure who's going to be the best team in the MAC and how high they're going to be rated in the computers when all this is said and done. We're going to take some guesses on some of the standings here real fast up the line. But Gale Force, your thoughts on the MAC on the whole first?
Good luck to all these riders, the blue ribbon, and everybody else trying to predict this, you know, this league this year. I mean, there are so many losses, like I said, but also, you know, a lot of, not much coming back. You know, you have, you know, Powell and I guess James from Ryder, you know, Ozzy Ahas from Iona, you have, you know, Ely from Siena, and, you know, other people. I mean, coming back, Belang and some of the bigs, but it's almost impossible to pick who's going to stand out. I mean, you have teams that, depending on the injury status, like Fairfield, waivers, like Siena, it's going to be crazy to really predict now, you know, to get these write-ups in time for these preseason magazines. And it's good luck, that's all I could say.
Yeah, I mean, there's some, I won't say consensus because that's not fair, but there's some general belief that, you know, Iona's going to be near the top of the league, Ryder's going to be near the top of the league. But after that, I mean, you could make a case in my mind for everybody, with probably the exception of Manhattan, who I think Yale Force and I both have as number 11, just because they're completely started from scratch there. I mean, you know, as bad as you can. Outside of Manhattan, I think everybody in the MAC, you can make a case to finish in the top five. I mean, every team. And, you know, that's probably true a lot of MAC years, but there's also, you could make a case that just about everybody in the MAC could finish out of the top five, given the way things are going. So who knows? But yeah, I have Manhattan 11th to start off. Gale Force, why don't you take us through your 11th and maybe a couple others that you have toward the bottom?
Well, I mean, Manhattan talked, you know, to see them not finishing at the bottom. They just, you know, were decimated, well, pretty much like Iona. And that's, I guess that tells you a little bit with the difference in the programs. Both programs were decimated, you know, with their rosters. And here Iona is going to be arguably the best roster. You know, we'll get to where I think they're going to finish this year. But where Iona is going to be predicted and where Manhattan is going to be predicted just shows you the difference in where the programs are at right now. But yeah, it's hard to see Manhattan not finishing last.
Yeah, and so everybody has a different way of doing this. I mean, we can go through team by team, and we probably will talk about everybody before this is over. But everybody's got a couple good pieces. You look at some of the guys they do have returning. It's like, well, you could build something around those guys. Or, yeah, this is a good coach. I think he'll be all right. I like to go by the coaches. There's a couple coaches in this league I just don't have any faith in. So I'm going to bump them down, and I'm going to bump others up, even if they don't look as good, just because I think I have faith in some of the coaches more than others. One team I'll give you for that will be St. Peter's. I mean, they have a couple good pieces. You look at them, though, and they feel like somebody that's going to finish, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think Bash Mason is a really good coach, and their system can be a pain in the neck in a league like this that might be devoid of superstars that can score. I can see them being a team that can crack into the top five. I'll give you another one that has a similar vibe to them, and that's Marist. Doug can do well in a situation like this. I mean, Marist does not do well, generally speaking, in the MAC, even with Dunn. But in a year like this, where there is no clear-cut powerhouse team, where there is going to be some, maybe a down scoring, Marist is one of the teams that has good couple parts left from last year's MAC finalist. That's for Yankee on the MAC board. That you can see them being a little better than they might look on paper and finishing top five. Just a couple of examples where I think a coach could make a difference. Sharky?
Yeah, actually, I agree with the guy. Looking at my top of, you know, the way I did the rankings, you know, my thoughts anyway. You know, we have Manhattan 11, and actually I had SPU and Maris 10 and 9. But, like, you know, Maris does have some talent coming back. As far as St. Peter's, he's one of the better coaches. And quite honestly, until I read Jaden's SPU preview, that I didn't realize that, you know what, hey, you know what, they do have some talent on his roster coming back and recruits. So, you know what, probably picking them 10 is probably too low. They're going to be better than I do. But, like, you know, the guy's saying, you know, I've had to, like, take them down to, like, 3 or 4 tiers. And the one tier I have with them, they can finish, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 or, like, even the top 5. They have talent.
Now I'm going to flip the script, and I'm going to talk about two programs that seem to have ability, have players who can make a difference. but it's coaches I have no faith in. One of them is Canisius. I think Stavisky could be one of the most dynamic players in the league. A couple other good pieces, but I think Reggie is playing out the string. I think he's getting ready to retire. He's probably one of the hottest seats in the MAC. They have probably borderline top five talent, but you're going to look up at this at the end of this year and you're going to see them in like ninth or tenth place. I can just feel it. It's just what we've come to expect from Reggie. Sorry, Reggie, if you're listening. I'll give you another team that people are starting to grow higher on that I'm not so sold on, and that's Fairfield. They have, they just brought in one of the best players in the MAC, Seton Hall transfer. They had some core pieces coming back. I got burned by Fairfield last year. I was high in them entering the season. And then, again, Jay Young is just one of those guys who I don't have a lot of faith in getting the most out of his team. Don't score enough to be a factor in any league. So, again, top five talent without question. They have top five talent without question. I can see them being in, like, the 7-10 game when it's all said and done. So there's two more examples for you. Give us some thoughts about those teams.
Well, we were staying with those two teams. Yeah, I mean, I had Canisius for a while in the top five, but they have the talent. But then again, coaching plays a role. And I took them out of my top five. I'm sure they're heartbroken in Buffalo that I did that, but I dropped them. I had one that will get to it that has always burned me for the last how many years, but they have a new coach, so we'll see where that goes. So it's Fairfield, Pedals is, that forward chip. It's nice, got the guys out, Bond. The scores don't mean anything. I mean, you look at the three scores. The first night, the vets had big nights. The second night, the freshmen had big nights. So who knows what the deal was out there with the competition. Maybe they agreed the first night. The teams will play the first string. In fact, who knows what went on? They have the talent. And then the most important thing was Goodine showed that he's healthy because he played in every game. And looks like he played quite a few minutes. Yetna, on paper, is a good, obviously one of the best pickups in the MAC. He's a double-double machine in the MAC, but you see these reports where he may not be back until November, December. He didn't miss all last year, so he's going to go 17, 18 months is being on the court. It's not that hard, it's not that easy, I should say, to just come on and be a double-double from the beginning. But at this point, I still have Fairfield. They have pieces back. A couple of the freshmen I like. So I still have him in my top five. But, guy said Jay Young is Jay Young. Thinking about some offense, they are going to be looking up at the top five.
Here's a team that I think we might disagree on a little bit, and that's Quinnipiac. I do think they caught a break that Baker Dunleavy left because he's also one of those coaches I had no faith in. But they do have a core of nice players. Their system will probably change a little bit so they could be effective in a league like this. I think you have them kind of like in that five-ish kind of spot. I'm not completely sold on them there just yet, but again, they're one of many teams that if there's a lot of ifs, if things fall right, they can probably even get as high as like fourth or third. But I'm just not sold. I don't even think Pecora is the greatest coach either. So let's see it, and then I'll believe it. So I'll give you a chance to talk about Quinny.
Well, on the dummy, I'd always had him as a, quiet, team that people overlooking. I just moved him, to my top five. When you look at the teams and the rosters, they have nice front court. They have guys returning like Reyes, Wiggins, Odiano. Taylor's coming back. He missed a whole year, so we'll see what he is. He's from Notre Dame. Let's see if he can, Barron from Siena. He left Notre Dame. He was a major impact player. We'll see if, Taylor can come close to that. Then you have Amari Tice, who was pretty good freshman year when he transferred in. Then you have Blanc. I feel he'd probably be an all-MAC. He's back for his fifth year. You have Savion Lewis, who, again, an injury. But, he was very talented in high school and a big recruit. If he's healthy, he could, be a problem. So the pieces are there, but again, health comes into play. And let's see what Pecora can can't be worse than what Dunleavy's done, you know, underachieved the way he has. So they have the pieces where I just have to put him in the top five for now.
I'm going to give you, before I go to that, I got to think about this. So I'm torn on where to put a couple teams. I'll give you the three teams that I'm torn on. St. Mary's, Niagara, and Siena. So I'll talk about all three of them just briefly, and then I'll give you the right. Mount St. Mary's is a program that, you know, you knew they weren't going to be great last year, Matt, coming in with mostly an NEC roster, obviously, since they were an NEC school. But they had a decent year, and certainly in a down year coming up in the MAC, where the MAC looks more like the NEC, no reason to believe that they can't be a top five player. They even with the parts they lost, because I do like what they run. I do like their system. So that'll be interesting to see. I do think they have a shot at that. Team number two I mentioned was Niagara. I feel a little more comfortable about them in the top five because I believe in Paulus. I mentioned how I feel about coaches. I believe in Paulus. They, too, though, had to overhaul the roster after a lot of transfers. But he's got a good eye for talent. And if three or four of those guys pan out, all of a sudden they've got one of the better rosters in that. So I feel better about Niagara being in that top five. The one that I'm on the fence on, and that is one that we're going to have some fun with, is Siena. You know, there's a lot weighing on whether Dura Gordon is going to play or not. How much is he jumping off the standings if he does play? Is he so much better than everybody else that he's going to jump three or four spots to get it? No. Does he make them better? Yes. Is Siena top five without Dura Gordon? Probably not. Are they top five with him? Yes. Do I believe in Carm more than some Siena fans do? The answer is yes, believe it or not. The guy wins. The guy, you look at the rosters that he comes in every year with, and they always do a little better than you think they're going to do. They're always in the mix. Yeah, there's nitpicking you can do. A lot of Siena fans are ticked off that he's holding onto a scholarship and not using every opportunity he has to fill the roster with talent. There's definitely some holes in that lineup, but so there's holes in the other 10 teams too. I have no reason to believe that with Dura Gordon, Siena can't crack the top five. Go for us.
Well, Siena is first 2 years. You know, I think he was like, Dave, I forgot the exact record, but yeah, you know, he was well over 500. You know, the last 2 years, not so much. You know, he finished third, I guess fourth by tiebreaker last year, but you can't deny the numbers, and the numbers have trended downward every year. You know, after 4 years, you know, no MAC championship as far as the NCAA tournament. In fact, they lost the last 2 years in the quarterfinals, something that Baggett takes a beating on. You would think going to year five, this team would be primed to be automatic top one or two in the league, and I don't see it. You have right now 10 on the roster, and Owens is not expected to play. Two waivers, you know, whatever the case is, and then the open scholarship, which I honestly believe you shouldn't hold scholarship at this level. For them too, I have them like in the mix, you know, with Mount St. Mary's and Canisius. I, you know, those three teams can finish anywhere from, you know, 6 to 8, whatever, you know. They need so much to go right. Even with Dura Gordon to crack top five. I mean, Ely's proven he's gonna be a star. But then you need tremendous jumps from guys like Tekken, Gribben. And while most teams don't rely on the freshmen, you know, Siena's going to need two or three of those freshmen to be impact players from day one, you know, to compete for top five. It's not a knock on them, but that's the way I see it. Where's the point? Where's the scoring coming from? Where's a lot of things coming from? And if Dura Gordon doesn't get his way, then I think they could be in for a very long season. But like I said, it's never good to need two or three freshmen to be, you know, big rotation pieces right from day one to compete.
All right. I think we've covered everybody except for what we feel is our top two. And we agree on even the order that we would pick them in. And we'll have to see what everybody else thinks as the official prognostications all come out from places like Blue Ribbon and other reputable sites and stuff. But we're talking about the top two in the MAC. I think we both right now have Ryder one. We talked about Illinois. We talked about the roster. I think there's a lot of depth there. How quickly they come together, how quickly the leadership is established in the roster, we'll see. We'll determine how much what they've learned during the non-conference will affect Iona's MAC season. The record will be, who knows, we can't pick that just yet. But Ryder just has more from day one back. They'll be a little more aligned starting from day one, so they're going to have an advantage. They'll work out any kinks that they've during non-conference. They should be able to hit the ground in the MAC running. So I can't see any scenario where they don't finish in the top two. But this is the MAC. Crazy things have happened. But I like Ryder first because of they just bring back. I mean, they bring back two surefire All-MAC guys right out of the gate. And I don't know how many teams are going to be able to say that. And again, they're in the system. These guys have been in the system. They brought some couple of good transfers in to mix in. And they have a good quarterback from last year's team. So I it's safe to pick them first. I'm not saying their world's better than Iona. I'm not even sure if they're better than Iona. But I don't have a problem picking them first, and I wouldn't be shocked to see them win the MAC by a game or even two games.
I think that's going to be the consensus. Iona, Ryder, 1-2. I believe on paper, a paper can, doesn't mean a whole. Iona may have the most talented roster. I mean, you look at, they have five D1 players on the roster that all average between 7 and 10 points a game. And like I mentioned earlier, a lot of those guys weren't the number one priority, studio. But all these kids, they average between 5.5 and 7 shots a game. So those numbers, those shooting totals are going to go up. I think teams in the MAC are going to have just a hard time scoring with Iona. I think Iona is going to score a lot of points just by the system. So, like the Coos there, you may have Iona just outscoring teams. Your teams just can't keep up with the point totals. Having said that, Ryder, like I said, returns two All-MAC players. They return at the name by Ingram Harrell, who I guess is the big center, who was very serviceable last year. The Keithin, the young guard, he was injured last year, but he's very talented. So, they definitely returned some talent too. But I'm going to pick with them first out of respect that they're going to start the year with two automatic All-MAC guards. And you pick Iona one with what Tobin walked into. It's amazing that he even has Iona is 1-2 with Ryder. It's crazy, but, just to be realistic, I would go Ryder one.
Well, we've taken you through the roster, we took you through the non-conference schedule, and now we've taken you through some high-level takes on the MAC. It's a long, still got a ways to go until the actual season's here, but it's going to be an exciting year in New Rochelle. I don't think there's anybody that can say they can change our minds on that. It's going to be a lot of fun watching this team start to gel and work their way toward what should be, or hopefully be, a very exciting march around here. Any parting thoughts, Gale Force?
I want to thank you for the invite again this year. Hopefully, next year, it's going to be not all this upheaval and roster change. In fact, when you look at it, already with two commits for 24, a couple of official visits coming up, top five for Big Recruit. They may have the 24 roster done before the 23 season. It's good times ahead. It's like I've said it many times on Twitter, Iona basketball is back. Tobin and his staff has regenerated this fan base. Everybody's all in. Looking forward to just a great season and good times at the Hack.
Well, I want to take the time to thank Gale Force /Sharkey for doing this remote visit with me once again. I hope you guys all enjoyed that as well. Looking forward to a whole lot of fun in your show this year. So thanks again for coming on. But don't leave us yet, people who are listening, because next I'm going to just roll right into our interview with Corey Schmidt, the head coach of Southwest Mississippi Community College, to talk about Isaac Rice.
Well, Iona fans, we thought we were done doing these kinds of previews of some of our new gales a couple of weeks back when we took our last recruitment in, but it's not the case. The Iona Gales got a commit from Isaac Bryce. He signed recently with us, 6'6 forward. He's got 3 years left, averaged 7.5 points, six boards, over two blocks a game, uber athletic, out of Southwest Mississippi Community College. And we have his head coach, Corey Schmidt, on here today for the podcast to talk about Isaac. Coach Schmidt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I look at this kid, and of course, as Iona fans, what we all do is as soon as we see some clips on a kid, it's like, all right, who's he remind us of? A lot of us went to, I don't know how well you know our program, we had a 6'6 forward last year named Barrick Jean-Louis, who was one of those defensive lockdown, uber athletic types, block, you know, full court blocks from behind, just a special athlete who just caused havoc on defense. So some people made that connection. On the offensive end, I actually compared him, and I got to see an Iona practice recently. We have a very similar size forward named Greg Gordon, who is just one of those beasts in the paint athletically, just kind of gets in there with great footwork and can get shots off over bigger kids, things like that. And just watching his offensive clips, he reminded me a bit of Greg Gordon. So can you tell us overall about his game on both ends of the floor from what you saw this past year?
Well, Isaac's a little bit of an interesting case for you guys out there. He's only played 3 years of basketball. You know, he grew up playing soccer, didn't really play basketball. And so he's still got a lot of growth ahead of him, and his game is changing, you know, by the week, by the month. You're going to see a different Isaac by the end of the year. So offensively, you know, for us last year, he was a five man, you know, at our level and at the JUCO level, we didn't have a ton of size, and him being 6'6 and athletic, you know, we played him at the five. That's what he played in high school. But all year, you know, in our individual workouts and in practice, you know, he worked on the perimeter, and we were expanding and growing his game in that regard. And so, you know, he has perimeter skills. And I think, you know, I've talked to Coach Tobin multiple times, and I believe they see him as more of a, you know, three type four guy up there. And so he's going to be, you know, obviously not just sitting down in the paint quite as much, but he is a freak athlete, plays above the rim, has great footwork because of that soccer background. And he's such a quick learner. You know, he's going to get up there and fit right in with whatever they're teaching and working on, and be able to seamlessly integrate that into his game. He's just like, you turn around every week and he's doing something that he wasn't doing the week before. So he didn't shoot a single three for us all year last year. Right now in drills and stuff, he's shooting anywhere from 60 to 65% from three, which, you know, he's going to be able to take and make an open three next year. And, you know, he's worked on his ball handling, be able to put on the floor, but all of that to try to get to be able to use that athleticism on the offensive end is the biggest thing. So defensively, he just has the tenacity about him that he, you know, competitiveness where he wants to win, and he's going to do whatever it takes. And he understands that the defensive side of the ball is very important. You know, both his high school coach and me, we both emphasize that side of the floor. And so he really bought into that. He was top 20 in the country in junior college in blocks last year. He was able to guard one through five. We switched a ton. We didn't play a lot of full court defense, but I know, you know, Coach Tobin, that's his system and that's how he sees him. And I think that he'll fit right in with that. He's more than capable of it. It's just, he did it his 2 years of high school. He just didn't do it here with us, but you're going to see a guy that flies around, that plays with the, you know, almost like with the hair on fire type mentality, just urgency on that defensive side of the floor, really athletic laterally and vertically. So can slide his feet to stay in front of, you know, those smaller guards, and then able to get up there and contest and block shots at the rim. So I hope that answers your question.
No, I certainly think it does. So again, you said he only had a very little limited basketball experience before you got him. So tell us about how much he progressed in that 1 year that you had him. And then are you surprised that he got interest after only the 1 year?
Well, for us, for our program, you know, we bring in a lot of guys that are qualifiers, and we try to help guys get the opportunities that they deserve whenever they're ready. You know, if guys are ready after 1 year, then they're ready. And JUCO is not the point. And, you know, obviously it'd be great to have him for another year. He's a great kid, great player. But for his long-term future, we want to do what's best for the kids. And so we promote and try to help guys get out after 1 year. That's actually how Iona saw him and found him. Is we sent him to a junior college top 100 camp after the season, and it was in July, and that was when Iona found, you know, coach, one of your assistants, I believe it wasn't Coach Tobin, was down there and saw him and really liked him. And then they brought him up for a visit and liked him again. And so that, you know, moved forward with everything. So I think it's one of those things where it's not necessarily normal for a lot of junior college kids to leave after 1 year, but it's something that in our program, we promote for those guys that are qualifiers.
Can you give us an idea who else was sniffing around at that time other than Iona?
There was a lot of programs that were going ahead and getting on him for next year. During the season, there was a lot of programs that, you know, came through our gym watching different guys. We had two sophomores on our team last year. We had a lot of freshmen. So we had two sophomores. One of them is going to Southern Indiana, and he brought a lot of Division I coaches into the gym. Throughout the year, they were watching him. And then our other sophomore is going to Southern Arkansas, which is a high-level Division II. And so, you know, a lot of D1s came into our gym throughout the year and saw Isaac and kind of had him as a name that, like, he's intriguing, good prospect, but maybe needs a little bit more time. And, you know, that more time was July, obviously, but for Iona. But, you know, he worked on his game, kept getting better. By the end of the year, he was better. He didn't have much interest or offers during the year, but after he went to that camp in July, we had about four or five phone calls. Actually, Fairleigh Dickinson gave us a call. Portland State gave us a call. And then a couple schools down here in our area, Southern Miss, some schools like that. It's about four or five schools that were already interested in looking at him for 2024. So his decision was down to, do I go to Iona right now or do I come back and have these other options for 24?
Okay. As somebody who has been, again, he's coming in only after the 1 year of junior college. If there is an area that you feel like he needs to work on to be really D1 ready, what would it be?
I think you're going to see a guy that's defensively ready to go right away and play and fit Coach Tobin's system perfectly. I think, you know, just with how hard he plays, with his mentality and athleticism and versatility on that side of the floor, he's going to be good. Like we talked about on the offensive side of the floor, he's mainly been a interior player for his 3 years of basketball so far. And so him beginning to, you know, explore that, you know, handling the basketball a little bit more, shooting the basketball a little bit more, that'll be something that as the season goes along, I think fans will be excited to see that and be able to notice that growth from him, because he's the type of kid that he's going to be in the gym every single day outside of practice. We worked out at 7 o'clock every morning. I mean, he rolled his ankle one game. I texted him later that night. It was like, hey, man, you want to rest your ankle? Go see the trainer in the morning. We can get started the next day. And he's like, nah, coach, 7 o'clock. Like, he's going to be in the gym every day getting better. And fans are going to love that and get behind that and love seeing his growth on. But that's probably the biggest area for that needs improvement. It's just that perimeter element of his game. Mm-hmm. Inside, you know, he's going to be able to impact plays at the rim, impact rebounding, make plays at the rim. But, you know, that perimeter aspect.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good thing is with Iona, the way Tobin went about trying to rebuild this entire roster is he brought in a few grad level kids. I think one other JUCO, and then brought in a bunch of younger players. So it's definitely a coach. He's not going to get thrown into the fire. That's a good thing. He'll get a chance to learn behind some older kids. So that'll really help him that 1 year of just learning behind all these experienced kids. And then he can jump right in and be a factor and get a lot of minutes next year, I would think, without a problem.
That's what I think is that they envision him as helping out on the defensive side of the ball this year, a lot more than the offensive side, and getting whatever comes to him on that side of the ball. And then, you know, growing into a bigger role as time goes on with his time there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So one thing I've always asked as we wrap up these types of interviews all this off season, why are Iona fans going to love Isaac?
Isaac's one of those kids that it's just fun to be around. Infectious energy and attitude. Everybody on our campus was devastated, happy for him, but devastated at the same time whenever they saw he was leaving. You know, from our dorm director to our school president to, you know, everyone on campus knew who he was, had a relationship with him. He's just the type of kid that, you know, is a pleasure to be around and talk to and great kid, great family, that the way he plays as well with his energy and his effort is something that fans can get behind and will enjoy. You know, it's always fun to root for a guy that plays as hard as he does and as good as kid as he is.
Excellent. All right. Well, Coach, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some background and dropping some knowledge about Isaac here. We're certainly excited to have him. He's the kind of energy kid that invigorates fan bases. So, and again, we saw his clips and most of us were like, yep, that's what we want. So, so we're excited to have him and we're glad you're excited he's here as well. And we look forward to catching up again down the line and hope you enjoy what you get to see from him this year, watching him play for the Gales.
Yes, sir. I already set my ESPN app to have alerts for Iona men's basketball. I'm ready to go.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Coach. I really appreciate you coming on and good luck to you and your team this upcoming season.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thanks again to Corey Schmidt for coming on about Isaac Bryce. Thanks again to Gale Force for being on location with me to talk everything Iona and Mac Hoops. This has been a long episode and I'm very sorry about that, everybody, but hey, we keep it real. Don't blame me. Blame Tobin and the staff for making roster changes this late. Who expected that? I didn't plan for that. So this is what you get. You get a podcast episode that's an hour and a half. So take it for what it's worth, people. It's all good. Got some great episodes coming up still. So keep hanging in there for the ride. It's going to be fun as we prep for what should be one of the more enjoyable Iona seasons in recent memory coming up this fall.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the IonaHoops.com podcast. This podcast is a production of IonaHoops.com with publisher Guy Filotico. The opinions shared during this podcast are those of Guy Filotico, IonaHoops.com, and any featured guests. This podcast is not affiliated with Iona University Athletics or the university itself. Thank you for supporting IonaHoops.com.